Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention and ADHD Coach Jeff Copper, and tonight we're talking about ADHD accommodations in college, insight, and tips. And with us in our virtual studio is Robbie Burson. Tonight is Wednesday, November the 2nd, year 2016, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Romney and I are sitting here broadcasting this show with you, and we're very anxious to get off and watch history in the making with the Chicago Cubs actually winning their World Series for the first time in 108 years. But you didn't call to hear about that. You called to hear about the show. We are talking tonight about ADHD accommodations in college, insights and tips. Some announcements real quick. The 2016 annual CHAD conference is around the corner. It's November the 10th and 12th in Costa Mesa, California. A week from tonight, we'll be airing a show as I pack and actually fly out to that conference. It's not too late to sign up. Learn more by going to chadd.com. And with that, also, this tonight's show is actually being brought to you by CHAD. We have a little tip we're going to run, so let's do this, and we'll get into the meat of the show. So here we go.
Are you aware that the Department of Education issued new guidelines regarding 504 plans? What does this mean for your child? Learn more about your child's educational rights on the CHAD website, which is now www.help4adhd.org. That's www.help4adhd.org.
All right, everybody. Again, we got a great show for tonight. Matter of fact, it's a spectacular show. I've been looking forward to this. We like to pay attention to attention, but one of the things that I don't think people do is they pay attention to the detail. On other shows, many people come in and they talk at a very, very high level about general stuff. And Romney's here tonight to talk about this topic, and she's got some very specific stuff. Real quickly, she's a life coach specializing in ADHD, executive function, organization, and time management. She holds an AB degree in economics from Duke University and a JD from Harvard Law School. She's a graduate of the ADD Coach Academy and is certified as an associate coach by the International Coach Federation. After many years of working as a corporate attorney, her experience raising her children with ADHD and executive functioning issues spurred her interest in helping young people and families. She often speaks with parents and children about ADHD and other learning differences who are struggling with how to help their children. What else do I have here? Well, actually, really, for more information, learn more about her by going to BeFocusedCoaching.com. That's B as in just the letter B, focused, F-O-C-S-E-D, coaching.com. With that, Romney, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to be here.
We've done a bunch of shows around ADHD, accommodations, the transition from high school to college. And tonight, you're not necessarily an educational expert. You've learned this stuff from the School of Hard Knocks. And I think you have a lot of great things to share with me tonight. But before we get into it, you know, I think that there's a lot of really well-intended laws out there that are designed to help those with ADHD. But at the end of the day, the execution of or the implementation of those laws is a little bit challenging. And I think tonight you're going to talk about a process that's actually kind of punitive. It's actually really difficult to get what you need, but you're going to kind of help guide us through what to think about to make that happen. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes this difficult, Jeff, is that while the landscape of what is offered at the college level has probably never been better and is getting better every single day, you know, the reality is there's thousands of colleges and universities across the country, and there is no uniformity as to what is offered, how it is offered, or the process for requesting or getting accommodations. And so, you know, given kids applying to multiple schools and all the anxiety surrounding that process, you know, boilerplate information is not necessarily out there, but the process that we're going to be talking about tonight is one that will work for everyone, regardless of where your student ends up going. You know, that's not to say that every student will get exactly the same thing, but in terms of the nuts and bolts of how to go about it, I think that this is a pretty good formula to work with.
I would actually say I think it's a good formula to work with, but I also think that you give some insight into this process and actually how to go to research colleges, which might actually impact the decision of where somebody might actually choose to go to school. Is that accurate?
There's no doubt about that. We could have a whole separate conversation about that and what to think about and how to set yourself up for a successful college search around where are you going to stand the best chance of getting the right mix of accommodations to help your student be successful in college. So there's no doubt that a lot of what we're going to talk about here can be adapted and used during that college search process.
So let's kind of get into it. I think we should just kind of segregate. Part of tonight is when to start going to college, and if you have somebody with ADHD, a learning disability, is really kind of in high school, then we're going to start to talk about, you know, once you kind of get ready to go, where you go, and then once you're in, what you do. So let's start. You have a student with ADHD that's in high school. This is the time to get prepared. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So on the one hand, I sort of shudder to say this because I know how stressful and time-consuming the college process is for students who are either entering or in their senior year and their families. But this really is the time that you also want to be starting, and which is not to say that you can't start before as well, but preparing yourself for this whole process of requesting accommodations. So what I say is the very first thing you need to be thinking about is what I call the be a Boy Scout, be prepared. And what I mean by this is gathering all the potential paperwork that you may need to or want to submit to a college disability service office in support of an application for accommodations. So the type of paperwork that I'm talking about, Jeff, includes any and all reports or letters that you have confirming an ADHD diagnosis and any other potential related issues or comorbid conditions from doctors, psychologists, and psychiatrists who have worked with or treated your student with respect to their ADHD and other learning differences. Then you're also going to want your most current neuropsych and educational testing report. And that's something that we'll sort of come back to because there's some issues around that that are worth discussing. You're also going to want a copy of your IEP or 504 plans if you have those with your school. And if not, any other written communications from your student's high school, which details the accommodations that they have been granted. And I really want to highlight this, confirming your student's use of those accommodations. And so let me just step aside for a minute. So very common accommodation to receive in high school is extended time on testing. And so very important that in any kind of written communication outlining that you ask your school to confirm that your student, in fact, has used that and ideally has used it on a consistent basis. And then the final thing that is always helpful to have is a letter from the College Board for SAT or from the ACT confirming the granting of accommodations for their particular tests. And this would include the PSAT and SAT subject test if your student had accommodations for those as well. So I like to point out those four things because it is not uncommon that you would not have all four, you know, just sitting there your desk ready to go.
So let me just pause for a second, because we like to pay attention to attention. At the end of the day, you're collecting all this data because your student's about ready to go off to college, and you got to provide that data to the college to get the accommodation. So let's just stand in the shoes of the college or university. They're requiring this in order to get accommodations. I got to believe that part of that motivation is it costs them money to do this and administrative type work, and they really need you to prove what's going on. If it is, they offer those services, but if they don't, they're just not going to give it out to anybody who wants something that's kind of going on. So it seems to me that you've got to be prepared, because they say that they want to provide it, but still there's a little bit of a burden on the university. I'm just saying that, but I'm just interested in your comments, Romney. Do you think that's an accurate assessment in terms of what they're paying attention to, or do you have another way of looking at this?
Well, I think, you know, I have never – no one has ever come out and said it exactly the way that you do, but I think we all need to be practical. And let's face it, I mean, budgets at colleges and universities are tight. They're being cut left and right. And, you know, different departments have to show justification for their budgets. Now, granted, you would think that if there's an ever-growing demand, then you would hope that budgets would be maintained and increased. But there are less dollars to go around. And so I think it's probably fair to say that colleges and universities, you know, they want to be spending the money that they do have to actually help students who really seriously need the help. But I think that there's another elephant in the room that needs to be addressed, and that is that there is lingering suspicion or fallout from things that have happened in the past that probably still go on today, where students who really do not have disabilities or who do not have ADHD have sought out a diagnosis in order to get extended time or get accommodations in high school and or college in order to do better. And so, you know, I think it's a complicated situation. I think, though, that for families with students who have a legitimate diagnosis and who have legitimate issues and concerns and need these accommodations, you know, I wouldn't advise you to approach this from a defensive mode. I really would advise you to approach it from an optimistic mode. You know, as I said, the landscape is getting better and better every day. I think it's better than it ever has been. And there really is a lot of help out there. And if you have this documentation, if you do have the need, you know, in all likelihood, you're going to go through the process and you're going to get what you need. But at the same time, you know, there's never anything wrong with trying to make things as easy as possible for the people who you want to help you.
And that was one of my big motivations for the show, Romney, is to kind of help people become aware of what's going on, because if you're going into the school to do the IEP, while you're there, you might as well get the letter now. If you don't need it, no big deal. It's just a request when you're in the meeting, but it's difficult to go chase that stuff down after the fact, or the letter confirming the diagnosis. You're there already. The more you can be thoughtful about that and build the file, hopefully you won't necessarily need the file. But if you do need the file, it's crazy trying to look for schools to begin with in the last minute. It's kind of crazy. So part of this is really an education, like you're there on site. These are the types of things. You just make a small request, gather the file, put it together, and when it comes to time, it really makes a lot of sense. I need to go to a break, but when we come back, one of the things that kind of stands out to me is the need to get testing done relatively close to the transition, and many people's reliance on old testing and some of the challenges associated with that, and then the need to understand exactly what accommodations would be helpful for your student when you're kind of moving forward. So when we come back from the break, I want to kind of pick up on that. Anybody who is is this show is speaking to you or you want to learn more about Romney, go to her website at B, as in just the letter B, focuscoaching.com. With that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Romney Burson having a great conversation about ADHD accommodation in college. Before the break, we were just trying to take a look at the stages of this and the need to kind of get prepared to be in front of the stuff. And we talked a little bit about the elephant in the room, lingering suspicions. I'm going to leave it that lingering suspicions out there and the practical need to justify what's going on for the cost. One of the things that Romney before the show we were kind of talking about is the need to try to get current testing done as opposed to relying on some things that are outdated. Can you talk to us about that space a little bit and why it's important to look at current testing?
Sure. So many colleges and universities will put a basically for sale date, for lack of a better phrase, on the testing that they will accept if they require testing when you're requesting accommodations. Often they want testing that isn't older than 3-4 years, which is not to say that if you fall within 6 months to a year outside of that, that they may not work with you on that. But I will say that my personal advice to parents is that, you know, I acknowledge this testing is not cheap, but there is a lot of change and growth that goes on during the course of the high school years. And it is very, very likely that if you rely on older testing, it's not going to be as relevant to who your student is today or speak to exactly what they need. So in addition to whatever the requirement may be from the particular college or university, I think that in a way you're doing yourself and your student a disservice if you don't go with some more current testing. There's another reason that I'm a big fan of doing testing closer in time, and that really has to do with the very last section of your testing, which is the recommendations for accommodations and other things to help your student based on the test results. Typically, those are written for the educational place your child is in at the time of the report. So let's say, for instance, your child was tested at the start of ninth grade. Typically, those recommendations would be for what they would like to see your student receive during their high school time. That is very different than what your child would like to have in college. And so if you are having the testing done closer in time, then you can ask the tester to think forward and to write not only maybe what would be good for the end of the high school career, but also college. But it's very interesting because just today, Jeff, I was actually reading a testing report for a new client, a junior in high school, and the tester did in fact include a section on recommendations for accommodations in college, and that's where I made all of my notes on this report, because what they did is they listed the types of accommodations that you would expect to see in high school or that are very, very common. And so the note that I have to bring up with the family is that going forward, when this particular student is going to be submitting paperwork for college, that they're going to want to go back and have that section changed.
Mm-hmm. So what's interesting to me in this is that having that testing done closer, and what I'm hearing you say is just not the testing, but also the recommendations of accommodations, and not just recommendations, but the more specific the recommendations. And if you can say these are our recommendations because they are in use now, you've got that documentation to ask for it. And there's, you have lots of recommendations that are kind of listed, but one of the things that just kind of occurred to me is I remember talking to somebody at one point in time where they had an accommodation where they would actually take their exams orally. Now, I'm not sure that could be done in college or whatever, but if you have somebody do a review and say this person needs an accommodation by taking an oral exam, that's really pretty specific in terms of an accommodation, and if there's documentation that this person has been doing it for a period of time, it would seem to me that when you submit that, they got a pretty good idea of what's going on as opposed to just this person needs kind of accommodations. You're in a better position to get them what they need. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Sure. I definitely like the idea of having that specificity in the recommendation section.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things, and yes, if you've received an accommodation in high school, something like what you're suggesting, which would be one of the more slightly more unusual ones mm-hmm. to find in high school, you definitely want it in there. But again,
yep.
I think that you need to go into, as you're transitioning to college, with the understanding that you may not get everything that you had in high school, but you may
mm-hmm.
find that there's so many accommodations offered at the college level that weren't offered in high school that you may not be any worse off. But what I like to do, in addition to pointing out very specifically what you received in high school and why and how you used it and why it was important, is to what I call do your homework. And by
mm-hmm.
this, what I mean, Jeff, is go onto the website of the college or university that you've either decided you're going to attend or that you're seriously considering, and go to the portion of the website that deals with disability services.
Yep, yep.
So often, these are pretty detailed websites, and they will list a whole slew of accommodations that they offer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is like the gold mine, and what
yep.
I really recommend that families do is that they read very carefully through all of those, and they actually think about whether each of those accommodations would be something that would be helpful for the particular student and why. And then the piece de resistance is that you then share all that with
yep.
the tester who has
yep.
written up the report. And you
yep.
have a conversation with them. And ideally, the family, the student, and the tester all agree on what is the panoply
yep.
of accommodations that are
yep.
going to be helpful. And then that is what's written into the report. And so then what you have is you have this great melding of what it is that
yep.
you had that helped you in high school combined with what it is
yep.
that the college and university offers that you think will be helpful. And so, you know, I think that that's the strongest presentation.
Yep.
Now, what do you do if you've had testing within the last year or so and you didn't go through that exercise? All is not lost, because it's very common for a family to request that a tester basically write an addendum to a report
mm-hmm.
that says, that, you know, now it's a year later and these things in high school have been successful, but as the student moves on to college, here are additional accommodations that I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And I, again, you know, I don't want to not recognize and be cognizant of the fact that, you know, this is another economic issue. But
yep.
if you can work it out or you can afford it, I think you're
yep.
doing yourself a disservice to not take that additional step.
Well, one of the things that we do is we've had a long-term supporter of Attention Talk Radio, and that is the Edge Foundation. And we run a really fun audio commercial that's really born colleges like $23,000 a year on average. And if they go through 2 or 3 years and they don't necessarily make it, it's kind of really a lost investment, because a college degree is kind of a, if you got it, you have it. And if you don't, you don't. And while some of this can be a little bit expensive, if you're going to send them off to protect your investment by providing these types of things to kind of make this stuff happen. And Romney, we need to go to break for a second, but real quick, I was just going to run through this stuff, because when I'm talking to people sometimes about accommodations, it's this thing, but when you start to say some of that stuff out there, it's kind of fascinating. And in our dialogue, these are some examples of stuff that's out there, like extended time, distraction free environment, or
mm-hmm.
note takers. There's actually some, I mean, I'm actually coaching somebody right now in Tampa who's, I mean, they have a person who goes with them and take notes. There's the smart pens like LiveScribe, where you can record what's going on. You do have to get waivers sometimes by the professors to let you record the class. There's text to speech recognition software, and there's speech to text. There's a lot of electronic versions of textbooks that are out there. Preferential seatings. And here's one that was huge for me, Romney. When I was going through college, I was an athlete. And it wasn't an accommodation for my dyslexia or disability, but because I was an athlete, we got to go register first, because we had to work around our athletic schedule. And as a swimmer, I swam twice a day. And I can't tell you what a huge deal that was for me to find the right teacher in the right place. And I could actually make sure that I got into that class that was the right thing. There's also one-on-one and small group discussion groups, oral exams in some situations. And so, again, I just want to give the people, there's a flavor out there. There's all this and more. And what I liked about what you said is, if you understand the accommodations and you go look at the school and the website, look at what's there. Now, there's a lot of stuff that's not printed that you can inquire about, but now you're starting to exercise your creativity, understanding what's there, understanding what the universe is out there, and you can marry what's available for your students. So we do need to kind of go to break, but I want to let you comment on that if there's anything you want to adjust or change before we actually run to the break.
I'll wait till after the break.
All right. Everybody, learn more about Romney by going to B, that's just the letter B, focusedcoaching.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an Edge coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Romney Burson, who is incredibly insightful with some great tips every time we've ever had our own show. And we're talking about ADHD accommodations in college, insights and tips. And the first two sections, we were kind of talking about how to prepare. Romney, this is the hard part to me, is your students in college. And I've seen some stuff that you've written that one of the most difficult things for those with ADHD is to self-advocate. And you have that issue. And when you get there, some of these accommodations, like maybe extra time, you've got to not only self-advocate, but you've got to go do some things in advance, like notify teachers like a week in before and sign off and blah, blah, blah. It just makes me this is some tough space. Can you just talk to us about this a little bit?
Sure. So this is actually the area that I think people don't think to think about. We're all sort of, those of us who have students with ADHD or who work with students with ADHD, we're all used to the conversation about getting accommodations. But we're not really used to the conversation about, okay, now that you've got them, what do you actually have to do to use them? And when we talked about the fact that the universe of available accommodations differs from college to college, the same is true for what you have to do to actually use them. So I like to give the two examples on two sort of different spectrums. The worst case that I have ever run across was student was granted extended time on all assessments, but in order to use this, at the beginning of the term, the student had to go to Disability Services, get something that said that, present it to their instructor, and walk through that with them. But then at least 3 days prior to any assessment, they would have to go back to Disability Services to get a form, take it to the professor, have the professor sign off on it, and return it back to Disability Services, again, 3 days prior to the actual assessment. Otherwise, they would lose the ability to have extended time. My comment when I heard this was, if the student could do this, they probably didn't need extended time to begin with. So, you know, I mean, how helpful is this? Now, luckily, I think, as I said, that's an outlier, but I raise that because I really want to impress upon people how important it is to talk about these things. The much more common situation is where you basically have your accommodations letter from Disability Services, and then you're required to, at the start of each term, to share that with your professors and to talk through how those accommodations are actually going to be utilized with respect to each individual class. And so, yeah, Jeff, that's where we get into this whole, you know, issue of self-advocacy, which is a real problem, not just for students with ADHD, you know, for all kinds of people. And I was listening to a panel of students with disabilities this summer at an actual orientation, college orientation, specifically for students who have been granted accommodations. And this panel really raised a couple of very smart pieces of advice. One was that, you know, to not give in to that sort of fear of self-advocating by just trying to email your professors and let them know that you have these accommodations and ask what they should do. Not going to go over very well. That, you know, by the time you reach college, for better or for worse, your professors expect you to be professional, to treat them with respect, and to have you come in and see them. So, you know, if this is something that's going to be a real problem for your student, I really recommend a couple of things. One, do some role playing with them. If they have a favorite teacher in high school they feel very comfortable with, maybe that person, that teacher would be a good person for them to role play with. Go talk to someone in disability services. You know, they're very used kinds of situations, and they're very happy usually to help you walk through it. Some universities actually have up on the disability services website videos on how to have this kind of conversation. And then I always try to tell students that to really remember that in this day and age, the likelihood is you are not the first student that the professor has seen who is getting accommodations. So a lot of things that you can do. But the other thing that these students really recommended, which I thought was fabulous advice, Jeff, was even if you, you know, get this all sorted out with them at the beginning of the term, don't presume that they're going to remember. You may be the most stellar star student, but they have lots of students. The onus is on you to remind them. So when it comes time for an assessment, particularly an important one like a midterm or a final, you know, a few weeks in advance, pop back into office hours or right after a lecture and just talk to them and say, hey, I just want to remind you about the conversation we had and, you know, talk about scheduling this. And this is particularly important, Jeff, when you have extended time, because if you have a schedule where you have back-to-back-to-back classes, you know, it may not work for you to stay after a class to finish an exam because it may cut into another class that you really need to be at. So, you know, I thought that those were some really good in the trenches tips from students who live it.
That's actually great, great School of Hard Knocks insight, because it's all in theory, but what happens, because I know my son is at University of Florida right now, and he's got, he said he's got like one day, they're all crunched up at the end, and he's going from one to another, and I can imagine if he had to have extended time on one, it's running to the next, that can create quite a problem.
Absolutely.
Rami, there's something else that we're kind of jumping to the end. There's a part where when they're there, they don't settle, and I want to be frank about this, and I am a little opinionated on this, so you can. I'm good if you disagree with me on this, but I'm getting more and more frustrated with the world and frequently asked questions and appeal process, because all too often that appeal process is web-based, and you go in, and there's some things that can't be solved. It's a give-and-take conversation to kind of go back and forth, and there's been some situations where I run into where a person had an issue and something wasn't working very correctly, and they were trying to make an appeal, and the student's disabilities office, you didn't walk in and had a conversation. You had to go out, again, I'm exaggerating, filling a digital form in triplicate that went off into a black hole and came back with an answer, and you couldn't fit the description in the boxes that you were supposed to describe. And they come back, and it's almost like it was almost like this was put in the way to prevent me from really kind of an appeal process. And there's been a few situations where I advocated is you've got to sometimes walk into the office and grab somebody by the arm and say, would you frickin' listen to me, and go through this kind of stuff. And if you speak a voice of reason, sometimes it gets around. But I'm bringing this up right now because it goes back to that challenge of self-advocacy. And if something doesn't work, sometimes you have to march into the office, which is not normal for kids these days, and not settle for it and say, somebody listen to what's going on. Again, I'm pretty passionate about this because it all sounds really good when they set up these processes. It's easy for administration, but sometimes becomes the very barrier that inhibits the whole process. So can you give me your thoughts on that, add to it, disagree or whatever? I just think this is a real area that the system doesn't really think about what it's doing.
Well, I think experiences are different, and I think colleges are different, and I think you're right. I think there are some where it is made very difficult, but then I think there are many where it really is user-friendly. My feeling, Jeff, is that, again, this is where creating relationships is what's going to help you. So here's an example. Very lovely, bright young girl with ADHD and some other real challenges, off to a big public university in the Midwest that surprisingly enough does not have a great setup for accommodations, disability services, etc. And so knowing that going in, she went out to school early and made it a point to go into that office to introduce herself, to build relationships, to sit down, to explain what her challenges are, to ask their opinions, to ask for help. She developed a relationship with the office. Now, when she has a little trouble or something's not quite right or she's not sure what to do, she goes in there and they're very happy to help her. Because she took those initial steps and, you know, developed that relationship. Now, I'm not saying that that's what you have to do in all cases, you know, go out to school a few days early, but I do think it is important to make yourself known to the Office of Disability Services. Find the person that you connect with. If it's not the person you've been assigned to, that's fine. You know, you can never have too many friends in that office. But I do think that, you know, when you have done that legwork ahead of time, you are far more likely to, if not get the actual result you want, at least get the hearing. And you may find that you know, they're far more willing to work with you. But the other thing that I want to say is, again, you know, it's how you approach it. And so I'm never in favor of going in and being defensive or being demanding, saying things like, this just doesn't work and you have to fix it. You know, I'm a firm believer that if there's a problem, then if you go in and you explain what the problem is and why, and then most importantly, offer up a reasonable solution. So here's one. A student was, you know, given the accommodation to take their tests in a distraction-free environment. The problem was, for this particular student, there's almost no such thing as a distraction-free environment. And so the room that was set up for them still didn't work. And the student was at a loss for what to do. Now, I was being asked for some advice by someone who, a third party who knew the student, and a couple of things that, you know, jumped out at me was I said, they said that the desks all face this window and all this. And so I said, well, maybe you could ask whether the student can't move the desk against a wall. That seems like a reasonable solution. Mm-hmm. I said, why don't you also ask whether it would be possible for the student to maybe use earplugs? So, you know, things that are trying to be cognizant of what is reasonable to ask the university to do, but that might also be helpful to the student. And I think when you approach things from that perspective and when you put that on top of having established a relationship with the office or people in the office, I think you're going to find that you're a lot happier and that you're going to get a lot better results.
So one of the cool things about what I do is I get to lob stuff out there and guests will always come up with these absolutely amazing things. And I really think, Rami, you hit the crux of it. Creating a relationship in this process is really central and really, really, really key. because it really permeates everything that we've really kind of talked about. And if your student has a relationship with disability services and they're working with them and you walk in with a solution-based type thing and you have some conversations, that brainstorming process lends itself to creativity, which brings about solutions that haven't been thought of that is really, really, really kind of unique. And I cannot emphasize bold, underline, accent really what you said. The one thing that I do want to comment on is I interviewed Dr. Ari Tuchman. I forget which interview because it was so many of it, but he said something that was really profound. Asking for help is a sign of maturity. At the same time, I believe we did an interview with Teresa Maitland from University of North Carolina, and there was a research study that was done that only 8% of high school students who actually had an IEP or a 504 plan before they got there. Now, that's not ADD. It's all – like dyslexia, like learning disabilities, et cetera, only 8% of them sought out student services, which kind of goes back to what you're saying about them advocating for yourself. And we've also done a show with Marie Paxson and John Wilson about that notion of taking a gap year for those kids with ADHD to give themselves a period of time for their executive functioning brain to mature and maybe ask for that help and learn to advocate for themselves. And sometimes I think that's really kind of in order to help the student help themselves. So I'm not so sure. I'm kind of interested in your thought, but that notion of having your student begin to ask for that help and to help them advocate for themselves, to me, very much is the hard part. And sometimes they need a little bit of space. So we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to get your thoughts on that that space a little bit.
I am a huge proponent of gap years because I think that it's exactly as you said, that there's often a lag of maturity. And if you just let the time pass so that the maturity can catch up some, so many things that were not possible become possible. What's interesting to me, Jeff, and I guess I'd like to throw this back at you to hear what you have to say, is that I have heard now a number of times parents tell me that they have specifically been advised against a gap year by their child's psychiatrist or psychologist, saying that, you know, anything outside of, you know, a really highly structured, you know, type of situation gap year is just going to be a waste, and that if you don't get them into college right away, that they're going to end up never going. And I'm just flabbergasted by that, and never know what to say.
I got a couple comments on that. First of all, by hook or crook, right or wrong, by accident, I'm a July 31st birthday. When I started started school in Texas, the date was August the 1st. So by definition, I was the youngest kid in school. And I remember going to school and struggling with a concept. And a year later, you cover it in review. I'm like, that was easy. And so when my kids kind of came around, my oldest son is a July birthday. So we started him in school a year late. Same thing with my other son, who's a May birthday. Greatest decision we've ever done, because as a boy, and he doesn't have dyslexia, learning disability, or anything like that, but just that extra year of maturity has just done wonders. And the confidence, there's a book about 10,000 hours about how students or athletes that are out there that are the older in their age group tend to do better in life. And so that's one of those things that I kind of advocate for, is what's the rush? Just start them a year late. So that's one answer. The other side of it is that in Europe, gap years are commonplace, and there's actually companies that employ people for gap years. It's much more mainstream over there. And so if you're going into a gap year just to let them sit home and do nothing, I actually kind of agree with that. It's going to create a little bit of a problem. I know it's a lot of money, but John Wilson at SOAR, they actually have a gap year where they take these kids off on some high adventure, which is fascinating to me. We've done some interviews with him. I've done a lot of backpacking, and I've done a lot of high adventure stuff with scouts. And when you're backpacking, believe it or not, there's a lot of budgeting that goes into play when you're trying to – like I took a bunch of guys on a 100-mile backpack, and not to carry too much is a budgeting exercise, which is a life skill. And they didn't know they were learning in that process, but they did. And John Wilson does a lot of stuff at SOAR that's very outdoor oriented. They think they're having fun, but they're actually learning some stuff. And there are some programs out there that actually are structured. And there's a lot of stuff that's overseas. It's a little slow to come in the United States. I think it's the future, but just to say, we're going to take a year off and do nothing, I think the the boredom is a devil's playground, but if there's some structure to it, I think that there's something that's there.
No, I would never advocate just letting someone sit around for a year. I mean, I guess the part that I was having difficulty with was sort of the time, the piece at the end where sort of the parting advice to the parent was, plus if you don't get them into college now, you'll find they just won't go. And I just boggled my mind. I mean, you know, I have personally dealt with a situation with a child who went straight off to college, and it was the wrong thing, and ended up leaving school and, you know, needing a couple years and learning how much they enjoyed working and then going back to school when they were ready. And the difference is phenomenal. And, you know, so I will say this. The other thing I think that we have to recognize is that, you know, we live in a society in this country where we sort of have these set timelines. And I think we have to recognize that for parents, it's scary to, you know, to say that your child needs a different timeline than the one that's mapped out that, you know, the whole rest of the world is doing. And when I talk to parents, you know, I really, really try to stress to them that the best thing they can ever do for their child is to acknowledge who their child is as an individual and to realize that every child's journey and timeline is different.
I love what you said. They're all individuals. They're not the normative data, and you got to meet them where they are. So, Romney, we need to pull this together. Everybody, to learn more about Romney, go to BeFocusedCoaching.com. Tonight has been a spectacular having you on, Romney, about the – if you're going through the process of high school, think about what you're doing right now to gather the data. If you don't need it, no big deal. It's a lot easier if you have that stuff together. Be specific as you get kind of at the end. Look at what the colleges kind of offer. Marry those two together and work with your kids to advocate. And if you do that, I think that that's a recipe for success. Just reacting to it through that process can be really, really a lot of work and almost kind of punitive. It can be so overwhelming, it actually might inhibit your ability to actually kind of cast your child into the right school. So before we close it out, any final words of wisdom, any final comments?
No, I just encourage, I think I'd like to ditto what you said and just say that everything will be a lot easier for you and your student if you do give yourself the time to do this process and breathe so that it's not a scramble and so that you can be listening to your student as well and hear what they have to say and hear whatever concerns that they may have so that you can help to alleviate some of those concerns before they actually get to college.
There you have it. So with that, we'll wrap things up, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Catch us next week. And if you haven't done so, go check out and sign up for the CHAD conference. It starts a week from tomorrow in Costa Mesa, California. With that, Romney, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Take care, everybody.